This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, happy Friday, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan together with Miti Shaoik, and you're listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. As always, we have two stories for you today. First up, if you have social phobia and often feel paralyzed by the thought of meeting new people or being judged by others when you speak in public, the movement restrictions during this pandemic have probably been, well, a welcome relief for you. But how will you cope when restrictions are eased and you have to start meeting people again?
And in our second story, you'll sense a mental health theme here because we are also commemorating World Mental Health Day, which falls tomorrow. So in our second story, we are talking about, well, you know, the fact that everything that has been happening and reported in the news over the past week, from the surge of COVID-19 cases here in Malaysia to the reimposition of CMCOs in some red zones, we want to look at how are you coping with the stress and anxiety that all this brings. We'll be speaking to a clinical psychologist to find out what we can do to cope with this as well as support our loved ones. So we'd like to find out from you, how are you really doing, you know, especially with the spike in cases, and if you are affected by the implementation of CMCOs in red zones. We have a poll running on Twitter. Are you feeling stressed and anxious? Are you feeling numb? Perhaps you're feeling helpless or angry. Those are the options that we have on our poll. You can take it at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us to tell you how you're feeling and cope at 018-789-8899.
Yes, and we'll be revisiting that poll a little bit later. But first, many of us have welcomed the easing of the movement restrictions over these last few months here in Malaysia. When COVID cases began leveling off, you know, notwithstanding the third wave that we're facing now.
Yes.
And most people really do dread the idea of another MCO being implemented if these cases were to continue rising in this current trend.
Yeah, but there are some people who have probably preferred the solitude of being confined at home. And I don't just mean somebody who's an introvert who'd rather watch, say, Netflix on a Friday night than go out with friends, you know. I mean people with a social anxiety disorder, which is also called a social phobia. And these are people who have an intense, persistent fear of being watched and judged by others. And this is actually a recognized mental health condition that can significantly interfere with daily activities like work, school, and relationships. Now, according to the MSD Manual for Consumers, the estimated annual prevalence of social anxiety worldwide is about 9% for women and 7% for men. And it's said that about 13% of people develop it at some point in their lives, which is a pretty high number.
So we have already spoken quite a lot about how the mental health crisis is emerging as a silent parallel pandemic alongside COVID-19. And we are experiencing this ourselves in ways big and small. So maybe some of you are dealing with extreme stress over employment, income instability.
Yeah.
You're probably struggling to manage work-life balance, the disruption in routine, and many more of you are worried about the COVID-19 cases themselves that do seem to rise and fall without any discernible pattern, seems to be constantly getting closer to your communities.
I know, the way we are tracking this daily press conferences with the numbers, right? And, you know, that kind of anxiety, we will be discussing that in our second story later, as we mentioned. But, you know, perhaps a lesser known proportion of those struggling with mental health disorders continue to stay under the radar because they may not recognize that they have a problem and they don't even want to come under any attention at all.
There is this assumption that people with social phobia would, you know, would have had a bit of a breather during this quarantine period because of the rise in virtual communications.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually is might be a bit of a generalization that doesn't really take individual challenges into consideration. In an article by the Observatory of Educational Innovation in Mexico, the author Drivet Razo pointed out that, and I'm quoting, "After all, each head is a world of its own, and a person's mental strength and resilience will determine his or her ability to confront the situations that arise."
I liked that description. Each head is a world of its own, right? You cannot presume that one person's reality is the same as another's. And in that same article, Razo also wrote that the move from the physical to the digital may not necessarily be a respite to people with social anxiety, but could instead put them in a situation of greater fragility, because now they have to deal with issues like how they're being scrutinized on video, which, you know, hides no flaws at all, and how they have to respond with their body language and all of these kinds of sort of new issues. And so the danger is that if we are not aware that people with social anxiety disorder are struggling and we're not sensitive to their needs, could we be putting putting them at great risk by, you know, just thrusting them back into normal social routines when the COVID-19 restrictions are eventually lifted. So let's find out from consultant psychiatrist Dr. Lim Chee Min, who's on the line with us now. Dr. Lim, thank you so much for joining us. First, can you explain what is social phobia and how is it often misunderstood?
Okay. There's this thing called social anxiety disorder, also commonly known as a social phobia. And it is this irrational and out of proportion fear of being scrutinized, fear of being in the center of attention, fear of being seen, fear of being judged. It's like a pathological shyness. It's like a crippling shyness, a very extreme self-consciousness. Now, you have to understand that many of these individuals, it's got nothing to do with character. They can have very strong characters. They can have very good characters. They can be very talented, very hardworking, very motivated individuals. But there's this fear, and there's this irrational fear of either being judged or being scrutinized. And as a result, they can't go out and meet people. They fear any form of social interaction. And that makes life very difficult because that makes life, you have to work with other people. Most jobs are like that. You have to go to a classroom with other people. You have to go to a lecture hall with other people. So it makes studies and career very stressful. And of course, if you are afraid to go out and meet your friends because you have this crippling shyness, then you have to, you know, stop going to parties. You can't ask anyone out for a date. In fact, you can see very talented, very motivated, very educated, very eligible young people who have never been on a date because of shyness, this social phobia, which is out of all proportion. And of course, this thing is often underdiagnosed and it goes untreated. So if you can imagine someone who can't go out and find a job, keep a job because it's really too stressful, genuinely too stressful for them, or go out on a date, it's too stressful, can't meet friends, it's too stressful, then, you know, I mean, academic and career pursuits are all going to be seriously impacted. And, of course, loneliness will become a problem because you can't have friends. Friends call you out and you would love to go out. You would really love to go out, but you can't because there's this irrational fear, and that's crippling.
Dr. Lim, when you say can't, can you help us to understand what exactly they're going through?
Okay. Now, it can resemble a full-blown panic attack. So, for example, let's say they are forced to give a class presentation because usually, I mean, their friends and their teachers, they are unaware of what they're going through. So they are just, you know, innocently asked to give a, you know, class presentation, you know, because everyone does that. And they find this absolutely terrifying. You know, if they are asked to be the center of attention, if they are asked to give a public presentation, that is like the worst fear of all because there's so many people watching them. It's not just that they may stutter out of anxiety, that they may blush out of anxiety, that their hands may start to shake or that they might get the jitters. Of course, these things happen. But they will get like a racing heartbeat. The heart is pounding. No one can see, but the heart is pounding because they are so fearful. It's like a panic attack. Their muscles all go tight. So their chest muscles go tight. And sometimes they feel short of breath. And it resembles exactly like a panic attack. It's intense anxiety. Really intense. And they don't want it. They don't need it. They see it as illogical and out of proportion, but it is there.
So how has COVID-19 and the subsequent movement restrictions affected people with social anxiety disorder?
Well, with social anxiety disorder, meeting big crowds, anything more than four or five people face-to-face, that is the most fearful thing. The next most fearful thing is meeting someone face-to-face, direct contact. So not having to go out and meet people is actually a relief. Okay, if you do it over the phone, it's less stressful. If you do it over the computer, maybe Skype or something like that, it's also less stressful than face-to-face. Okay. So online interactions are much less stressful for usually for someone with social phobia. So the lockdowns, I mean, hopefully, you know, hasn't caused any stress to people with social phobia, social anxiety disorder.
And what difficulties will they be facing as some of the restrictions are being relaxed?
Okay. When people with social anxiety disorder, often, you know, often they are used to it. They've gotten used to it over so many years, they think it's normal. They don't even regard it as anxiety disorder. So they've lived with it for so long. And every day they go in, they get used to meeting people. It causes them stress. But because they have practiced meeting people, then they can sort of tolerate. They can tolerate the stress. However, they get this holiday break. For example, if it's maternity leave, paternity leave, they get a few weeks break or a few months break. For example, this COVID lockdown. And then suddenly, and during this time, of course, the least stressful situation is not to meet people, not go out and not socialize. And so very probably a lot of people haven't gone out to meet people. They've kind of stayed at home. They've been homebodies. Mm-hmm. What happens is when the COVID-19 lockdown, for example, lifts, and then they have to go back to the office, they have to meet people again, they have to meet customers, they have to meet colleagues. At that point in time, someone with social anxiety disorder may find that they can't do it. Mm. They can't do it because if they return to that situation after a long break of not having to have to practice and sort of make themselves immune, they go back and now they have, you know, a full-blown like panic attack symptom. Intense fear, intense discomfort. I mean, your heart is like pounding and people are thinking, you know, am I going to die of a heart attack? Of course, they're not going to. But, you know, they have this feeling that their chest is tight and then they can't breathe and so on and so forth. So going back to meet people after a long break, that could be a real problem.
So what can they do?
Excellent. They can do a lot. Okay, I always say psychiatry really is an optimistic branch of medicine because the advances have been so great. So we expect good outcomes. Go see a specialist. Go have it treated. Okay, now, a lot of people, they don't even know that they have social anxiety disorder. They think it's normal. Mm. They've lived with this stress. They've made themselves inured to it. You know, they've hardened themselves to it. Mm. And they think that this is normal, that they're putting up with so much stress. So they may actually come up, and the first thing that they might say is something like, I feel suicidal. I feel depressed, which happens because they put up with it for so long. You know, it can get to them. Okay, it can make some people actually very depressed. Mm. And so the first thing they'll say is they'll come up with signs and symptoms of a depression. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I'm losing weight. I'm sad all the time. I have crying episodes. I mean, this is not me. This is not my character, but this is what is happening now. So you dig a little bit deeper and you may well find that they've had social anxiety going back 10 years, hasn't been picked up at all. And you'll be surprised if you treat the anxiety disorder, which is the root background and in some cases the cause, everything else disappears. Because you know, if you know 15 people, okay, one of them will have social anxiety. The statistics in the States is that I think at any one time, I think it's 7%. And so this you can sort of generalize globally. I think that's a reasonable kind of estimate, actually.
And how do you treat this?
Ah, great. Okay. It's always a combination in psychiatry. So you go and try and treat the anxiety in general, and then you try and treat the anxiety specifically. So anxiety in general, cut down caffeine. Go light aerobic exercise. Go burn off your chemicals. That's always a good idea. You get yourself physically fit. You can do a lot of things and make yourself mentally fit too. Mm-hmm. However, you'll find that a lot of people with social anxiety, actually, they keep themselves physically fit. They're actually quite motivated, conscientious individuals. And specifically, okay, you can also do psychotherapy. So there's cognitive behavioral therapy. There are various behavioral techniques that can be used, okay, to have them deal with the anxiety of being in a crowd, of being watched, being looked at, of performing on the stage, so on and so forth, giving presentations. But they also need to look at medication. The SSRI antidepressants are effective for social phobia, even if a person is not depressed. They are generally effective. You've got to find the right one for the client, meaning fewer side effects, so on and so forth, and then trying to get the right dose as quickly as possible. And we expect good results, but it's got to be picked up first.
You know, Dr. Lim, I'm wondering, how is social anxiety disorder different from being an introvert?
Sure, sure. You see, I mean, you know, tons of people are introverts. That's perfectly fine. You know, they like their own company. If they feel they need more company, they'll go out and make friends. They are free. But if you have social anxiety disorder, you won't even walk into a shop if there are people there.
Right.
Because you find people who won't walk into 7-Eleven until, you know, they'll wait until it's late, until there's no one there, and then they walk in. And sometimes you'll find people who won't even come out in the daytime. Okay, they just don't want to be seen. And of course, then there'll be sort of like heavy clothing, maybe a hoodie, so on and so forth, because this intense fear of actually being scrutinized and all that. But, you know, if you treat that, they become way less self-conscious. They lose this crippling shyness, and they are free. They are happy to interact. They are free of anxiety. They're free of fear.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lim. We were just talking to Dr. Lim Chee Min, consultant psychiatrist, about social anxiety disorder, which is also known as social phobia.
And he was extremely optimistic that there is help and support available for those living with this condition. But of course, the key is to recognize that you have it and to reach out for help.
And to recognize perhaps if somebody in your family or your circle of acquaintances is struggling with
it. And not minimize it.
That's right.
Yeah. So as tomorrow is World Mental Health Day, we are continuing our focus on mental health in our upcoming story. But we do need to take a quick break first. But you can continue to tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. First, we leave you with In Spiral Carpets with This Is How It Feels, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.